Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Met Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
All right, everybody, we're back for the final segment of the Jay's Play Show on Golf News Net Radio Network. I am Jay Flummo. We are here with Gary Van Sickle of Sports Illustrated and Golf Magazine. Hey, Gary.
Hello, Jay. Thanks for waking me up from that power nap. Thank you.
Well, that's what happens when the commercials come on. Luckily, they only last a couple of seconds. Okay, everybody, it's time for the JB's Best Trivia Contest question. Everybody that comes on the show as a guest gets a chance to win a bottle of JB's Best Hot Sauce. You remember John Byra, right, Gary? The old golf writer.
Yes, I do. Well, I'm sure he doesn't want to be called old, but yes, I know John.
Right, old in the new sense of the word, meaning back in the day, not old in the old sense of the word, meaning like decrepit and withered and all that.
Yeah, he's just not currently golf writing, but he did.
Well, and that's because he decided to chase his dream. He started to make hot sauce, and now it's on every table in the South, okay? Everyone loves it, and so you're going to get a chance to win a free bottle because it's time for the trivia contest question. Your category is going to be rock and roll and pop culture.
Good. I just lost. But go ahead.
Well, we'll see. Okay, I personally think this one's a fairly easy one, so fingers crossed for you. Who is the lead singer of Yes?
Oh, man.
I'm sorry, who?
Yeah. No, I know. Yes, Roundabout is one of the coolest songs from the whatever rock era, whatever genre.
Very good. That's right.
Good.
Okay, you're round about getting
it. I want to say his first name was Robert, but I don't really know. I don't really know his last name.
Maybe you might have been thinking of Robert Plant.
That's all I can think of, but it's not Robert Plant, but it's...
No, it's John Anderson.
John Anderson, yeah, he was
John Anderson. I thought he was the president before Lincoln.
Well, that, yes, it was awful. You know, John Anderson's a pretty unique name. There aren't many of them out there. He's also
on
the Sports Center and a few other things.
And he ran for president once on the independent ticket.
That John Anderson, man, what a flashback. And that'd be a trippy question. Well, let me give you a trivia, my all-time trivia question, TV trivia.
All right, turn about is fair play. That's fine. Go for it. What do you got?
This one's really unfair because even though it's from a well-known TV show, you had to have seen the origin episode to know the answer. But the question is, what was the skipper's name on Gilligan's Island? Not the name of the actor who played him.
The actor's name.
Yeah, Alan Hale Jr. On the show, and nobody ever gets this because it only comes up in the original episode when they're shipwrecked on the island and they have a radio broadcast. They're listening in, and you hear everyone's names except Gilligan, who has no last name. He's just a person named Gilligan. But the skipper has a real name in the show. What is it?
Well, I'll just throw out a wild guess, okay? I will go with Davy Jones.
That's incorrect.
Okay, oh well.
It would be a great coincidence if the answer was John Anderson, but in reality, the answer is Jonas Grumby.
Who?
Exactly. The skipper is Jonas Grumby, but his name is never again used in the series after the initial episode.
What is his first name?
Jonas, like the Jonas Brothers.
Jealous? Oh, Gillis. Gillis. Like Gillis Malosh, the famous goaltender, or the not-so-famous goaltender, for the California Golden Seals.
Well, that's even more trivial, but...
yeah, really.
it's funny that, isn't it funny that, A, why would the character have a name? And if you're going to bother to give a name, why do you never use it in the next 180, again, in the next 180 episodes of Gilligan's Island? I don't know.
Well, that's because his name is so stupid, okay? Gillis Grumby, you know, it sounds like something that Charles Dickens would have picked for a name.
The professor's name is something generic. I don't even remember, like Ray Palmer or something. I don't know. Who cares? But, yeah, Jonas Grumby, it's hard to forget that one, except, nope. But, yeah, I've asked that a lot of times. And another really good trivia question for people who don't live in the Northeast is, if you ask people, what's the capital of Vermont? Nobody knows that. The rest of the country.
Oh, Montpelier.
Yeah, well, you live in the Northeast, so you know that. You go to Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, they barely know what
Vermont is. And they're all going to guess Burlington.
And just like people in New York City think the capital of Minnesota is Milwaukee, they don't know.
Oh, they think the capital of New York is New York, those guys. That really bothers me.
Oh, yeah.
Both, I'm talking metaphoric, not literal, you know.
Well, they think the capital of California is Los Angeles.
The capital of California is Hollywood. Sacramento. Remember when Shaq, even Shaquille O'Neal, the capital of California is no longer Sacramento. And everybody just shook their head and rolled their eyes at him.
Well, then you have states like Maine. It's like, why do they even have a state capital? There's no city.
But that's another one where people would say Portland, but it's Augusta.
It's Augusta, and I've been there, and the Capitol building is under construction. They got a big, putting a new copper dome on it. But Augusta, the population of Augusta, Maine, is 19,000. If it's not the smallest state capital in the country, it's got to be in the top two. I mean, it's barely even a town there. It's amazing.
Well, The Onion once ran a hilarious article, Fish Opens Tour in Wrong Portland. You know, they made a joke about Fish tried to play Portland, Oregon, and the gig was supposed to be in Portland, Maine. So,
we've had stories about the geographically challenged Europeans. A couple of writers on their way to the Masters have been booked flying into Augusta, Maine, not Augusta, Georgia.
Ooh, I remember that.
Yeah, yes. It was more than one guy. It happened more than once, too. There's a couple of guys who did that, but.
Luckily, you can get another flight out of Augusta, Maine.
Yeah, so, maybe not that same day, but eventually.
You're going to miss the dinner, though.
You're going to miss the dinner.
So tell us a little bit more about the trends that you've been following and things that you've been seeing out on the tour.
Well, it's just this, you know, again, we're in this building mode where we're maybe developing some guys who, whether it's Justin Thomas, although, he won last fall in Malaysia, but we're seeing some guys who are good players who are positioning themselves to make a splash. Ricky Fowler kind of already has, but.
Well, watch out for Smiley Kaufman. You know, you had him as somebody that people might not know, but he was on my radar after he won earlier in the year and had quite a number of seconds and fourths and then played so well for so long at Augusta. Okay, he's young, he's fearless, you never know. He also might contend at Oakmont. He's a good sleeper pick.
He is. You know, there's a lot of guys like that. Russell Knox is another one. Kevin Kisner's kind of quieted down, but we're seeing some guys kind of build a base from which they can maybe ascend to become something of a star. And we're seeing a few guys kind of rally. I thought the interesting trend, it's a little early to talk Ryder Cup, but, last August I thought, the Europeans are teams coming apart. The Americans, I think, if you'd asked me to pick a team, I'd have picked in the U.S. back in August. But all of a sudden, we've seen Lee Westwood and Luke Dylan come alive. Justin Rose is playing well. They've got Danny Willett now. All of a sudden, the Europeans have simply reloaded, and the Americans haven't. So now the pendulum swung back the other way. But, yeah, we're seeing a lot of different guys win. James Hahn, Brian Stewart, Charlie Hoffman. Guy, Brandon Gray finally, after his nice week at Chambers Bay that he kicked away. Luckily for him, everyone had Dustin Johnson on 18, because otherwise you're going Brendan Grace. He had a 3 wood out of bounds into chambers and into the ocean. I mean, what were you, you know, on 16? What were you doing? So there was a guy who kicked away a really prime chance to win the U.S. Open, but he didn't have to live with it the way DJ did. So we're seeing some guys build up, and like I said, we've seen Scott have a hot start. We've seen Day set himself apart. We've even seen Graham McDowell have a few highlights here. So we're seeing some familiar names mixed with new guys, and I think what we're really needing is some
consistency from some of these guys.
Yeah, we need to see some guys. We want to see these big guys win a little more often, like Day is doing, and go deep. And we want to see some relevant close finishes, relevant playoffs. I mean, what was the playoff we just had with James Hahn and Roberto Castro? no matter how exciting that playoff was, those are two guys, the public, you know, you need one famous guy in there to get the public's attention. So,
but then later on, we had Sergio winning in a playoff last week.
Yeah, Sergio, so there's a name, and really, that was, Brooks Koepka is the great. They were talking about, he's going to be great in the Ryder Cup team. It's like, did you watch him play the last 5 holes Sunday? Oh, my God, that's the opposite of great for the Ryder Cup. He had that tournament locked away and just played chicken golf and kind of, I'll be honest, he gagged it away coming in and gagged it away in the playoff. Made some combination of bad decisions and just playing nervous. So,
you just said
that handed to him on a platter.
You just said the most important thing in sports, okay? You can't play chicken. Some of the best advice I ever heard about playing in the clutch. We're going to go back to hockey for a minute. We're going to go back to the Pittsburgh Penguins for a minute. It was Mario Lemieux. Okay. Right before Game 7, the morning of Game 7 in 2009, when the Penguins had to go on the road and play the Red Wings for the title, he said to all of his players, he sent them a text, play without fear and we will celebrate at center ice. And that's what you have to do. You can't play defensively and win. Even a U.S. Open, especially now with the graded rough. And that was what Spieth did wrong. He went into his defensive shell at Augusta far, far, far too early. Then he got himself into a position where one bad swing and one mental error, boom, game over.
Well, I also think Jordan may have gotten defensive because he couldn't trust the swing. His swing wasn't right, and he'd been doing it with smoke and mirrors. But, yeah, the worst thing for him is he made a mental mistake out of fatigue. He'd been hitting this little flare right all week whenever he tried to hit a cut. And he and his caddy, you know the story, they decided to hit you play a draw, just get it in the middle of the green. And he gets over the ball, and he's not thinking right because he's mentally drained. And he decides, I can hit this little fade, even though I'm 0-9 this week. And he's taking himself for that he didn't stick with what they decided to do. I mean, that's a mental mistake, and I say it's born of fatigue from all the miles he put in. And because you notice, a lot of those holes he screwed up Masters a week were late in the round, and he just didn't have mentally. He needed to take February off instead of traveling all over in the Middle East and Asia and China and Australia, and he didn't do that. But you live and learn, and His swing, he's got his putting straightened out, but his swing still, his driver still, as we saw, I mean, you're watching Dallas, and he was, I thought his middle lane turned into four right, that was bad. So I have no doubt he'll be back. He's got a couple of weeks. And besides, I think I heard somebody say you don't need driver at Oakmont, Jordan, so it shouldn't be a problem.
I don't believe he said you don't need
to hit driver much at Oakmont because it's short. Like, oh, my God.
He's starting to sound like Phil Mickelson's evil twin, okay? Yeah, I'm not going to carry a driver. I'm going to carry 2 3-woods and a 2-wood and a Franken club.
Well, I mean, guys for years, and back in the going the 70s and 80s, you go to the U.S. Open and the USGA, they all felt like the USGA took driver out of your bag. They made the fairway so narrow and the rough so penal that you didn't dare hit driver because it just wasn't worth the extra 30 yards. You were better off hitting a 2-iron and having 200 yards in and you weren't hitting a driver in the rough. And there's still some of that around, but I think Jordan must have just caught Oakmont on a dry, windless day with a rough knot at full strength. Because when it's wet and not rolling, and even if it's rolling, if you don't hit the fairway, the ball isn't rolling anywhere, and does not. I've never heard anyone say Oakmont's kind of short. When you're on that back tee at number 8, and it's 300-yard par 3, you know. Number 8 is a great example of a drivable par 4, except it's a par 3.
Well, happily, you won't have to worry about that. Two interesting things about Oakmont this year. Number one, it will play almost exactly the same yardage that it did before. And number two, 8 is not going to be played all the way back to 300 yards. The maximum it will play is about 280, they said. But we are going to see all of the rough shaved down in front of the bunkers and a lot of balls hit into the fairway bunkers. So difficult question coming up here. And take your time to think about it, okay? We were wondering this earlier. Who is the best on the PGA Tour at playing on fairway bunkers?
Well, that's a tough one because you just don't see guys do it very often. And it'll be kind of a moot point at Oakmont because they went back before 2007 and deep in the ball.
That's right. You can only advance
those
little pond.
You pull out a 9-iron and you're hitting it 120 yards and that's it. You're not bopping it on a green. It's not even Seve, if he was alive, is putting it on the green. But that's an excellent question. You can't just pick a guy who's good around the greenside bunkers. You got to pick somebody who's, you know, a good ball striker. So, I mean, I don't know. We saw Rory.
It's an interesting stat to do some research on. Where's Sal Johnson when we need him?
he would certainly have the answer for that. Wouldn't even check back in 6 months.
Well, we will see him in Oakmont, so maybe we can check in with him then. Good old Sal.
Well, and we're going back to, I'm actually working on something right now, U.S. Open preview related. I did a chart a few years ago on the 63s. I'm doing a list of the 10 best 63s in majors. What's interesting, I mean, to me it's stunning with all the advances in technology since 1973. I mean, golf has only sort of resembled what it did in 1973. The fact that nobody's broken Johnny Miller's 63 in 43 years with all the improvements and everything, the length, I know courses have gotten tougher too, but and there's been, six or eight guys who should have shot 62s, including, Miller should have shot 60 at Oakmont that day. But the fact that 63 is still the record in major championship golf, that's 43 years. That's a mind-blowingly long time. You know, the Augusta National, the Masters record for the low score there was 64 by Lloyd Mangrum, and that stood for 46 years until Nick Price shot 63 in 86. In 86, 46 years, but that's just one tournament. I'm talking all four majors. This record has now stood 43 years. So people who are tired of Johnny Miller and whatever, that's fine, but you have to acknowledge that remains one of the most ridiculous, that's definitely the gold standard of championship golf.
Well, I have to tarnish it just a bit. He played Soakmont, not Oakmont. The place had more deluges than the Great Flood. They were playing lawn darts that week. You know, it was nowhere near the golf course.
Yeah. Well, maybe you know why there were only three other scores in the 60s that day he shot 63. So explain that. It was so easy.
Because everybody was banging a ball all over the place. They didn't put it in the fairway. Miller was very accurate. Fairways and greens. The rest of the guys must just not have paid attention. But there have been plenty of other 63s. Let me ask you this. Did his 63 make your top 10 list of 63s?
Johnny Miller?
Yes.
Oh, that's number one by a mile.
Well, what were two and three?
It's tough, it is hard. It's harder to rank them than you might think. I think you have to have some bonus points for winning the tournament. But that said, you talk about courses that were Soakmont or easy. I mean, when Jason Duffner shot 63 at Oak Hill, which is normally tough.
That was Soak Hill, yes.
Guys were taking pelts like they were on the Oregon Trail. I mean, guys were hitting divots that were 18 inches long. So, I mean, I don't think that's in the top 10. I think, you know, I think Nick Price in the 86 Masters was an amazing round, considering he bogeyed the opening hole. And
how about Tiger at Southern Hills?
Tiger, yeah, Southern Hills. The greens are always soft, but that's in the top 10. I think, and, you know, if he'd won the tournament, it'd probably be the best one, but the one I've got at number three, and I might still move up, is Gary Player won the 84 PGA at Shoal Creek. He was 48 years old. He had 10 birdies that day, and the next best score was five shots higher. And he missed a five-footer for par and a birdie putt of 8 and 12 feet at 16 and 18. I mean, like Miller should have shot 60 at Oakmont, Gary Player at 48 should have shot 60 or could have shot 60 at Shoal Creek. And factoring that in, that makes it probably, from a pure golf standpoint, maybe as good as any. But then again, you know, Shoal Creek was only 7 years old at the time. It was still pretty new. It probably wasn't as challenging. But that said, nobody else was in the five of them, and the same with Miller. I mean, you're playing in the final round of a tournament, and you come up with 63 and you win it. I mean, it's one thing to shoot 63 when you're nine shots back and out of it. It's another to come back and win. I mean, that's part of what makes his the best, and he was also the first to do it. I mean, that kind of opened the gates, maybe, and but that was just the start of the modern era of technology and hitting it longer and all that. But, you know, there's stuff wrong with a lot of them. And you remember, you talked about Tiger Tulsa. I mean, he had that putt in the last green that went halfway down and came out, and Tiger always referred to that round as a 62 and a half. So,
well, if we're going to do that, then Nick Price shot 62 and a quarter. Because Nick Price is getting 270, not a 180.
Well, how about the 1980 U.S. Open at Baltusrol, when first Nicklaus shoots 63 in the morning and then Weisskopf shoots 63 in the afternoon?
But Baltusrol, like Southern Hills, gives up a lot of 63s. Remember Ray Floyd shot 63 in Southern Hills.
It was too short there, but both of those guys should have shot 62. Jack was chipped up on the green. He had a three-footer. But the greens were so fast, if he lips it out, he was afraid of lipping it out, he might have an eight-footer. He basically, years later, he admitted, I chickened out. And Weisskopf had a 95-yard wedge shot in for to get up and down for birdie with his third shot, and he dumps in the bunker and makes par. The interesting tidbit I've discovered is, at that time, Golf Magazine was offering a $50,000 bonus to anyone who broke the scoring record in a major, either for 18 holes or for 72 holes.
And they had a $50,000
bonus. Yeah, $50,000 bonus. First prize for winning the Open was $55,000. It was a gigantic bonus. I mean, at the time, Weisskopf said, I never thought about the $50,000 until I got in the 18th tee. So Weisskopf kind of admitted he dumped it in the bunker because he thinking about the money. And, you know, he didn't break 75 the next 3 days, whereas Jack went back, and I don't think he had a bad second round, but he came back and played well. But, you know, it's funny because the same courses keep giving up the same low scores, whether it's Baltusrol or Southern Hills.
Or Congressional.
The PGA in August, when they always have soft greens, I mean, there are more 63 shot on PGAs. Or really
that's
at the British
right.
Open, where those courses were the British Open was the last to kind of really respond to the distance gains. And, you know, Rory shot 63 at the old course, and, like, I don't even know, that's still, like, only about 300 par. So that's not in my top 10. But you can have a debate about it. They're all, you've got holes in all of them, but I think Miller being first and doing it in the fourth day to come behind and win, I think that, and the fact that it was really a routine 63. Miller Barber said, who played with him, said I could have been a 60 easy. I think that's what set that one apart.
Well, great stuff, Gary. It was fantastic having you on the show. I will be seeing you in 3 weeks at your beloved hometown of Oakmont.
Yes, I just hope the USGA figures out a way for us to get to the golf course in a timely manner. But somehow I think that.
No, I think it'll be okay. You'll recall that at Oakmont, we can drive right up to the entranceway. It's ergonomic, and we can walk.
I don't think that's the case this time.
Oh, no, but don't tell me they mean
the local. The local media parked at the bottom of a hill right across the bridge last time in 07 at a school. That's not where the local media lot is. The local media lot is now off the turnpike, right near Fox Chapel, actually. So that's going to be a 20-minute shuttle ride. And somebody told me the media shuttle from the Marriott downtown is going to have to take a convoluted route somewhere else to get there, and of turning a 15-minute ride into a 45-minute ride. Now, I don't know if that's true, but all the good parking is reserved for people who aren't media and or fans. So I wouldn't get your hopes up. And on top of that, there's the Liberty Tunnel's under construction, Route 65 under construction if you're coming from that direction, which you probably wouldn't be. But there's East Pittsburgh. It's summertime. There's always a couple bridges and a tunnel under construction. That's just the way it is. So at least on the bright side, they blew up the Houlton Bridge in February, and we got a new four-lane bridge that actually doesn't look like it's about to collapse. So that's the positive side. The bad news is I don't think they're going to let you go across it and drive up. I don't think you're going to be able to drive your club up, car up to the front of the club up, but we'll see.
Oh, well. Well, let's go, Pens.
Okay, thanks, Jake.
Catch you in a bit, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to Jay's Plays. We'll be back very soon with another episode and some great guests. And tune in to www.thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm Jay Farmer. Thank you guys so much for another great show. We're at the end of another great Jay's Plays show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to an empty room, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as a theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Play show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.